you know, the histogram, the we, none of us can remember.
Yeah.
The one I should have looked it up when I knew you guys couldn't figure it out.
Come on, Amy.
Hi, I'm Ashley.
I'm Emily.
And this is Misconceptions, a podcast about two gals who understand the painful, emotional, sometimes absurd, and often lonely experiences of infertility.
Join us as we relive our own stories and welcome the many others willing to share their adventures.
This is officially episode 3 of Misconceptions, and Ashley and I have told our stories. You are hopefully familiar with what, you know, the adventures that we went on. And Amy, you are guest number 1. So we are going to start by spinning a wheel. So Ashley and I really struggle with what we say when we talk about, did we have a journey, our path of infertility? Was it our experience? Was it our story? Like, we just bounce around a lot with, like, what the hell are we calling this? So with your permission, we're going to spin a wheel and we're going to stick to the word if it comes up for the episode.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So it's very high tech. So we're going to spin the wheel and we'll see what word we're going to stick with.
Let's do it.
Okay. Today we're going to talk about your journey,
Amy. My journey.
Your journey.
I'm all about it. That sounds okay. Good.
Okay, so the floor is yours to talk okay. about kind of what, where do we begin your journey?
Sure, yeah, journey is a good word. It's, I don't know, I feel like I've got like bullet points to talk about, and it's not an easy thing to talk about. My first experience with, you know, conception or miscarriages or loss and fertility started in 2016. I just got married. I had a Paragard IUD and I got pregnant unexpected. I 2 weeks after we moved to Vermont, after we got married, I was pregnant, and I was like in denial because I was like, what? I've had this IUD for 6 years. Like, we wanted children, but I wasn't ready to have children. Went to Planned Parenthood on a Saturday. Thank you, Planned Parenthood. And it was amazing. You know, they said, you know, you're pregnant. We've got to get you in to go see someone on Monday. And because they couldn't actually get me in, it wasn't emergent. Saw someone. I did like a vaginal ultrasound and they're like, yep, you're pregnant. I think I was about 7 weeks pregnant or something. And they said, you have a choice. You can either take the IUD out or keep the IUD in. And I think we just got, you know, we just got married. So we're like, we do want kids. This isn't when we wanted kids, but we're going to just go for it and just see what happens. So they pulled the IUD and I waited like 2 weeks to miscarry because they're like, you're probably going to miscarry if you pull the IUD. Because it's, you'd like disrupt everything that's going on and nothing happened. So during those 2 weeks, I was in that mind frame, mindset of like, okay, this baby really wanted to be here. Like, it wasn't when I wanted the baby to come, but I am having this baby. So like total emotional whirlwind, go in for my first ultrasound, no heartbeat, not there anymore. And I was alone for this DNC because my husband was working. And it was such a weird feeling because I was so excited, but also, like, didn't expect it to be gone because I didn't have any symptoms. I wasn't bleeding. I felt really, really tired. I had all the pregnancy symptoms. And so it was sort of this, like, shock. And then I went home. They're like, you go home and just wait for this. Like, you're probably going to miscarry naturally. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll go home, because I had never gone through it. So very similar to, like, this waiting that you guys were talking about. Go home. I think, like, 3 days go by. And it's like, okay, I know I there's a dead baby. And, like, I don't – maybe that's not how I should phrase it. But, like, it felt that way to me. Like, the dream of my 2 weeks of thinking this was going to go one way was no longer. So finally I called and I said, like, nothing's happening. What do I do? And they're like, well, you know, you could come in and get some medication, or you can do a DNC. And I was like, well, I still don't know what I should do. And the doctor on the phone was like, if it was my family member or my daughter, I would have her do the DNC. So I went in, I got like a patient advocate to the hospital, and I got the DNC. Different experiences. It was interesting hearing both of your experiences of, like, the cushy DNC versus, like, the super traumatic one that Emily went through in the ER.
Yeah.
I would say it was kind of, like, in the middle. It was really, really uncomfortable, and obviously I was very scared and alone. And similar to, like, the heavy petting on your forehead, this woman was, like, my advocate, who was kind of, like, afraid to go near my body. Like, I don't know that she had ever been in a DNC before.
Oh.
She just seemed very uncomfortable in the room to just, because it's very vulnerable. Like, you're all out there to get everything, and you see a lot of stuff. So
it was her first day, Amy. Gosh.
Yeah, it was her first day. So anyway, that was my first. Fast forward, we decide we want kids. We decided to wait a year. We decided to try. I got pregnant within 3 months. And we were successful, and I had an ultrasound that went well at 8 weeks, and I have a 3.5-year-old daughter today for it. Nice. So I was like, cool, like, that just happened because the Paragard IUD was in there. Like, bad luck, easy to explain. And then I had another miscarriage when we decided to try for number two. That one, I went in at 8 weeks, another missed miscarriage is what they call it, when you have no symptoms and you find out at the first ultrasound. And I go in and they called it a blighted ovum, which is basically the embryo never fully, like, turned into an embryo. Like, it was enough to, like, the HCG levels went up, but it wasn't a viable baby. It, like, didn't have a heartbeat again. So I was really surprised by that one. And it was really hard to accept. This is the one where I did the misoprostol at home, because I was like, oh, it wasn't a real baby. This was just a blighted ovum, which nobody tells you. Like you were kind of talking about it a little bit, Emily, in the last one. But yeah, I put the misoprostol in my mouth for 30 minutes. You just sit there. With the medication in your mouth, you can't swallow it. It just, like, dissolves in your cheeks. Oh. And I remember thinking, like, what is this? Like, how is this really what people do? really painful. I think I was prescribed some pain meds. I did take them. And it was shocking to me. For what a blighted – when I had a blighted ovum, right? So I can imagine people that were further on – had more tissue of an embryo, and it was incredibly traumatic for me to go through that experience. I didn't have any horrific bathroom experiences, but it was rough. It was really rough.
So, Amy, yeah. Do you remember, so with the, I don't know a lot about blighted ovum.
Sure.
Ovums. What is the plural of ovum? But I do wonder, like, did you have emotional or, like, hormonal fallout from the miscarriage?
Yeah, because okay. I, like, all of my hormones were still going up as if I was pregnant.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I had, like, nausea. I had, like, all the symptoms, but it just wasn't, like, a full embryo. Like, I'm not really sure. Exactly. But it wasn't, I mean, I had more, and I had more experiences on the other ones. But I think the main thing was that I had to do it naturally versus the DNC, and it was like night and day. And some people really prefer to like have that time at home to process and to accept the loss and to like see the miscarriage. And I think for me, that was not the right choice at all.
Did you have a choice with the blighted ovum, or did they just send you with the medicine?
They did give me a choice. They did. And since I had gotten a DNC before, and they said same thing, like, oh, you're at higher risk, like, you don't want to scar anything. And I'm like, wow, well, like, I definitely want another baby. And like, I guess I've already done a DNC, so I shouldn't do this. And I had never gone through the medication. And it seemed like, okay, I'll just have a day at home. And on, you know, in the movies, miscarriages are like, they're in the bathroom for like an hour or something, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, I'm like, I can handle that. Like, I can do it. And it was like 2 days of a lot of emotions and pain, you know.
And it ends up being a different kind of scar.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I agree that you have to be a very certain person to be able to do that at home. And like, not everybody.
Well,
is.
I think all of us had the choice, mm-hmm. because we found out at the doctor's.
Yeah.
Whereas some people find out and they don't have a choice, and it's happening for them right then. Mm-hmm. Like, I do have friends that have gone through it, and they're like, this is a miscarriage, I know right away, and they are like at home, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah. That's true.
That we were like, you could do this or that, but I think not everyone does get the privilege to get the DNC.
True.
If we want to say that that's a privilege.
Yeah.
The scraping of your uterus.
Right.
It's a privilege for sure.
Yeah. And the bleeding after the DNC too, like, there was just so much that is never talked about. Like, I think I expected to be like, oh, after the DNC, like, I'm normal. And I think I don't know which one it was, but I still bled for a long time. That's
did
another
you
like
get hospital underwear. I just have to know. Like, did you get the fancy like gauzy hospital underwear?
No, oh, I know I did what? Not.
I didn't either.
I just got like sent with a pad, and it was like, drive home. See ya.
Okay, well, I know what I'm getting all of you for the holidays.
Yeah.
So get ready.
Yeah. Okay, so My next thing was, then I became kind of like, okay, well, this next one's going to stick. And I had told friends about my miscarriage, and I was one that didn't wait until 12 weeks. So people knew I was pregnant, and I had to like tell a lot of people I wasn't anymore. And, you know, friends pointed me to things like this sperm meets the egg plan. Have you guys heard of that?
No.
It's like a surefire way to get pregnant online system where it's like you use the ovulation strips, and, you know, on day 8, you start testing and you have sex every other day. And then you have sex like every day during your 5-week window. And then just to be safe, you have sex every other day after that.
Oh,
I'm not
Lord.
Kidding.
Yeah. So you're just, so really it's just have a bunch of sex is the plan.
Yeah. It's really just like a chore.
Yeah.
And so I was like determined to make it happen because I had it in my mind that I needed to have children close in age. And I was like, oh, well, I had my miscarriage. I've already gone through 2 miscarriages at this point. So like that won't happen to me again. Like, I've put in my time. But I was at high risk because I had like technically 2 miscarriages before. And so they saw me when I got pregnant, they saw me at 7 weeks for an early ultrasound. And I saw a heartbeat. I think it was 7 weeks. Yeah. Yeah. It was at 7 weeks. And I was like, cool. I'm in the clear. I did this. It was worth the like ridiculous sperm meets the egg plan.
Your marriage survived through that.
Right. I survived. Yeah. And this is February 2020. So, like, this is, before
God.
All the shit just went down. Like, and then I realized, then I go in, like, I wanted to go in for my 9-week ultrasound. But they're like, we're not letting people in right now. you might as well just come in at 11 weeks, because at 11 weeks you can get your blood test done and then you only have to come here once. And it's like, we don't want to expose you to COVID. So I was like, okay, I'll wait longer. Again, no symptoms. As far as I knew, I was pregnant and things were going to be great. But I went in at my 11-week appointment, another first week, like first ultrasound, I guess, and there was no heartbeat. I was alone again, and I just couldn't believe it. Because in my mind, like, I had done everything right. I did all the work. That one hit me the hardest, because I think the other two I came up with reasons, like, oh, it was a blighted ovum, or, oh, it was the IUD. But that one was like, okay, something's wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem getting pregnant, but this isn't sticking. And why does this keep happening? And the setback of, I'm going to have 3 more months before I can try again. I have to go through the DNC or the meso, or like take the medication again. And I had several friends at this time who were pregnant at the same time as me. And it was really, really hard, because they all continued to be pregnant and I got another DNC. And I'm thankful that my husband was home to watch my daughter, because of the pandemic, he wasn't working as much. When I got that done, but it was really, really tough. And then I think I became even like more obsessed. Like, I started to go to acupuncture, because you hear about how that's good for fertility. I started taking a bunch of herbs. I had convinced myself that I had inflammation in my body, so I cut out sugar, I cut out gluten. Like, instead of doing this, like, trial and error thing, I was like, I'm just going to do it all. And, I still believed I was in control. I still believed it was my fault. There was something that I did. So I was, like, grasping at whatever I could to feel like I was going to succeed this time. And, like, obsessive, like, the 2-week wait, I was miserable. I was, like, not a human being. Like, you have to use your first morning urine to, like, do a pregnancy test. And I remember there was one time where it was like 4 days before I was supposed to test, but I always tested early.
Of course, we have
and
to.
And it was like 4 a.m. or something. I woke up and I had to pee and I was like, but I have to do a test. So it's like dark out and I'm peeing on the, like, at this point, I'm using the strips. I'm not even using like the real, like the test that you buy in the plastic things.
There are no words on these. It's just like,
yeah.
Yeah, you like, just like dip them into the cup. Like, that's what I'm doing. So I'm like dipping into the cup. It's like 4 a.m. My husband's sleeping. And I, like, for some reason, won't turn the light on. Like, this just shows how crazy I am. And I'm looking at my strip with my flashlight on the phone in my bed, like a crazy person. And then I'm like, I think that's a line. And then you, like, get crazy and you start Googling. And there's contrasts where people can, like, change the contrasts on the pictures of their phone that they take to see if they can find the hidden line of the positive. And I saw a line. I swear I saw a line. And so, like, the next day, I take another test and I see a really faint line. And I was pregnant. And I go in and I wait until I've, like, missed the period. I always got the HCG test done first. And they're like, this is really low. This is a really low HCG level. We're concerned. And it turned out to be a chemical pregnancy, because I think I was able to know with the blood test, with the HCG test, that it wasn't going up. So I didn't have to wait for the ultrasound on this one. But it was still not a successful implantation. But man, I was not well. Crazy. And the obsession that I had over trying to get pregnant and then to honestly get pregnant. Like, I was getting pregnant almost every time I was trying. Like, seriously, that was what was happening. I did get pregnant, and I have a second daughter. They're only 2.5 years apart. Like, people would never know I went through this, like, recurrent miscarriage loss in between, because I still have kids close in age that some people do intentionally, you know?
Yeah, that's the ideal age difference for some people.
A lot of people choose that, yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, after that one, I started working with a reproductive endocrinologist. I got, you know, the histogram, none of us can remember what it is. The one, I should have looked it up when I knew you guys couldn't figure it out. Where they put the dye up there and they look at everything, and everything looked okay. And I don't know, every time I went in for anything, I was just a wreck. And then with my second daughter, I got a successful ultrasound, and I was able to come back 2 weeks after that. And so I got a lot of early ultrasounds. I think I did 3 ultrasounds before they officially moved me to OB, because I was like in the reproductive endocrinology world. And so then at 12 weeks I went on, but I never felt safe. Like the innocence of pregnancy was gone. And I thought, like, at any moment I wasn't going to have this baby. And I, like, it lasted the entire pregnancy. Like, there were moments where I felt okay, and it really helped once she started moving, like once I hit the second trimester. But I lost a lot of faith in myself and trust in a lot, like everything. Like, the anxiety I have carried with me still, and there's no reason for it anymore. Like, I have the dream. I have 2 kids. It worked out. But, like, I think I'm still scarred from the trauma of going through those miscarriages and the obsessive thoughts of what that does to your brain and your body and your emotions. I don't know. It's really hard.
I can relate to that. I'm almost 32 weeks right now, and I am sitting in what is supposed to be the baby's nursery, but I just can't. I just feel like until that kid's in my arms, like, this is still an unknown. So,
yeah,
I get what that feels like, and that trauma just lives in you. And how do you get rid of it? It doesn't escape with a healthy child being born. That stays. And
I did do a couple of things that I think did provide some comfort. I continued to see an acupuncturist when I was pregnant because I got a nap. Like, I pretty much just went there to nap. And I think I told myself, like, maybe it's doing something, but either way, I'm getting an hour of, like, no phone. I'm, like, just napping here. And so seeing my acupuncturist was great. I put kid controls on my phone. And what I mean by that is I had my husband lock out social media and Safari. Like, so I have an iPhone. So, like, the internet, basically. I couldn't search or open links because I got to a place where I was unhealthy Googling all the time and just paranoid. And so I just, like I said, I need this taken away from me, but I still need my navigation, like, or whatever. And I still, like, still didn't give up social media completely. I was like, I still want Instagram for 30 minutes, and then I want it to lock me out. Oh. And, like, it wasn't where you could then press the button and say, like, never mind, like, I still want more. So that really helped, was, like, being unplugged from that world and only getting it for a little bit of time. My acupuncturist also recommended getting a piece of jewelry that was rose quartz. And I was just doing anything at this point. So I was like, all right, I'm going to get a rose quartz necklace. And I wore it for my entire pregnancy. I never took it off. And whenever I was nervous, I could, like, fidget with it. And that was really helpful. And I, I chose a necklace because it was like close to my heart to like tell myself endless possibilities was the mantra that we had kind of agreed on. And I saw a therapist every week who works with miscarriages and pregnancy after loss. And I think that really helped talking to other women, like what you guys are doing now. And that's why I wanted to come on here and just kind of talk about it, because hearing about other people share their experience really made me feel like I wasn't alone. But I think there is something to be said about, like, if you don't talk about it soon or like in that moment, we do kind of like want to black it out. And I don't remember all the details. I forget how bad it is. Sometimes I'm like, do I want to have a third baby? Well, I'll have a third baby and I'll just schedule it in and I'll get pregnant on this day. No, I won't.
Your husband's like shut it down. Shut
right. it down. And also, like, it was so, so hard for me. Like, it was so hard. Why do I think that I could just start over again? Like, it's just nuts. I don't know.
I think you're the first person I've talked to really who has talked about internalizing so much about what you can control. And I think that, like, from my experience, I was just like a victim of it. I wasn't thinking like I could control this with like what I'm eating or how I'm sleeping or acupuncture, or, you know, I was willing to try things, but I was just like such a victim. Like, this is happening to me, but I still wasn't thinking like, how can I dial this in? So I think it's a really interesting like perspective for you to share that you tried so hard to dial it in. Like, it's a formula. Like, it really is.
Yeah.
That's just like such an awesome perspective. But then also the other side of that is, are you grieving what's happening, or are you just like moving to the next pregnancy and just putting it behind you, which is, you know, were you running from the failures or the infertility and then moving to the next thing?
Yeah, I think I don't think I was really able to feel it in the way that I should have. And I don't know that I have ever really allowed myself to feel it. You guys probably don't know the Enneagram, but like somehow the Enneagram like really speaks to me. Have you heard of it?
Is that the number where I think I'm like a 2 or a 3?
Sure, yeah. So it's off topic, but I'm an 8, and 8s are like obsessed with control. And so it's very like spot on for me. And they don't want to show any weakness or vulnerability. And I think that for me, like, it just, that's why I handled it that way. Like, I couldn't show, I mean, my close friends and family knew that it was hard for me, but like, I allowed myself to be sad for like 2 days, and then it was like back to normal, back to here I am, and we're just gonna try again.
Because you're not supposed to be stressed, because stress is the worst thing for
exactly.
I'm such an 8.
Are you serious, Ashley?
Yeah. And I did everything anyone told me to. I was in a floating tank, which was very boring. I didn't have the experience I thought I was going to have. I went to an Ayurvedic person who dripped oil on my belly for like an hour and a half. And, in my hair, like, I was just like, I drive home with olive oil in my hair, like, what am I doing? Like, how is that gonna get me pregnant? There are things I can control, and book, and I have an appointment, and I can check that off because it's something I've tried. So and I still am obsessed with acupuncture.
I'm just like fascinated. Wait, so I can't get over the fact that Ashley's an 8, because I think if I had to, like, I would have thought she was more of a 2 or a 3. I love it. But I think, So I'm a pleaser and I want everybody to be happy. So when I couldn't be pregnant, I was like letting people down. I was letting myself down. I was letting my husband down. I was letting my mom down. Like, which could have been why I was like internalizing it and just being a victim, not like being proactive and like trying to remedy it. I was just like, this sucks. I'm like,
well, you also people. Like the ectopic pregnancies. Not that I view them differently in my head. Like, I do view the ectopic as like, there's no way that was your fault. Like, absolutely not. And then for me, I'm still like, well, you were doing something wrong. Like,
yeah. Oh gosh. It's just like, why do we do that to ourselves? Or we just blame ourselves and sit in it and wallow and. But you two are so proactive. I'm very, very impressed.
But you do feel like you're spinning in circles, though. Cause,
yeah,
you run out of things to try, I guess.
And we haven't really talked about, like, on the podcast, we haven't really addressed our partners, like our husbands or, like, how, Amy, that sounds so hard. Like, just your constant cycling and trying and how did that go?
Yeah, I know. He was really great, you know. I think that I think in some ways he didn't understand how much it affected me because I really did put up a wall. And then occasionally I would have like major outbursts and he was like, "Why are you so mad?" Like you I think you had mentioned like the rage and like the rage is in me. Rage is in me and we got to figure out how to get rid of that rage. But, you know, he helped, like I said, like, he did things that, he was the one that kind of suggested the boundary on the phone, which at first I was like, I'm not a child, like, how dare you? And then I was like, you're right, I do need that. Also, like, I hid the pregnancy tests, I asked him to hide them, so he hid them, but I guess, like, emotionally, I think he couldn't be sad. Like, I or at least we've kind of talked about it a little bit. Like, I was so sad, and it was my body and my... I think he sort of had to be the strong one and, like, not be sad about it, even though he's allowed to be sad about it. What do you think about your partners and how they handled all the losses and the journey?
I do think it's like a very male thing to be a caregiver. And like sort of hide your emotions because they don't want to make it worse, add to it. I loved the support. Being an eight, I don't want anyone to take care of me ever. Like, when I have a cold, like, I'm fine, get away from me, I'll handle this, like, I'm on my own. And I think that I just got so low that I accepted help. And that was, like, a really important part of our relationship, is that, like, I let him in. And I had to get that low and alone to be like, okay, you can take care of me a little bit.
Yeah, I think that for me too. Like, I guess I just feel like it was short-lived. Like, I needed more than he could give, given like his career and being so far away from family and the pandemic where people couldn't travel, as you said, Ashley too. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I just didn't get that support that I wanted.
What about you, Emily? Because I think that your husband is very supportive and like sensitive and in tune to emotions and like gets it. He's gonna listen to it, so you have to agree, I guess.
Yeah, I think he is wonderful, but I think he's the head and I'm the heart of the marriage for sure. And so, you know, I think if he looked back, he would say he never really wanted kids, or he was very comfortable not having them. And so his emotions in our journey, were wrapped up in my safety. You know, and I think that there were times where I was not very safe. Like, my health was at risk, my life was at risk, and he had no tolerance for that. Like, his anxiety for my safety, is alive and well today. Like, and you know, this is completely off topic, but our first year in Portland, like, I had the ectopic pregnancy in April of 2014. And then in June of 2014, I was in a school shooting, and that just like flipped his lid. So I think he's very comfortable with us being done. And anytime I was pregnant, I'm sure he was just like fully clenched and anxious. And like, you know, we got to a point where we're like, well, what now? What's going to happen now? So when we finally walked away from it, I think he was like never happier about it. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't going to be worth it to him. And I think he's very comfortable not being a dad. But yeah, he's a good one. I've put him through a lot. So, Amy, things that did help you while you were going through this, like, what were some things that were said to you, or friends, or resources?
Yeah, that's a good thing to bring up. I had mentioned kind of finding that piece of jewelry, having a mantra. I do think acupuncture or yoga or something like that is worth it to just calm your body and turn off the brain, like the monkey mind or whatever. I do think sharing my story, or having a select few people that were really there for me that I could text, that weren't my family, you know, that I didn't feel like I had to wait and protect their emotions on, and that I could include them in my journey, like from the day I got the pregnancy test. So I think that that's good to have that close person that you can talk to or text. I also joined Pregnancy After Loss support group on Facebook, just to like try to manage my anxiety and like hear other stories. And that was more like written, but also valuable for me. I got a couple books. Like I said, I got a talk therapist. I'm a therapist by trade as well, so that was kind of a no-brainer. But and then there's another podcast out there called Infertility and Me, and it's a different style. This one is a lot more, I like that you guys are talking to each other. It feels more accessible, and raw, and like just real. And I really liked that. So those things helped. And time.
Ugh, time, damn it. I know. It's like nobody wants to hear that, but it's really true. And
yeah.
But with time comes like memory lapse, and like you really do forget some really hard pieces, which makes it hard to come back and process, or want to open that back up and process it again.
Yeah.
But then when you're going through it, like for somebody listening today, if you're in the middle of it, you know, it feels like you're drowning, and It might be too raw. But if you are several years away from it, like I am, you're like, now what was that? What was that HCG level? Was you know, like you're kind of irrelevant. Like your story is no longer like applicable because you can't remember the fine details. So
it's hard. I love talking to two professionals. This is amazing, because when you talked about the window of tolerance, I was like, okay, what's this? I need to look it up. And then I said to Emily, once I did look it up, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so attached to this concept now. This is who I am, and I'm not in the right spot.
Totally. So I don't think I mentioned that speaking tonight, but it was like in my notes that I sent to you guys.
Yeah.
And the window of tolerance is really like we live in this space where we're okay. And then there's a space out of the window where we're not. And that's where we like freeze, we fight, or we flight. That's where we're running. And like, I kind of think I've been out of that window, just like you said, for a long time. And so my fuse is so short. Like, I'm anxious over the smallest things because I think like that trust in myself or that things are going to be okay got like pretty messed up for a while. And I'm really lucky and blessed. I like it worked out for me. I have two beautiful daughters and I feel like I shouldn't be holding on to that anymore. And it's still here. You know, that it's not big T trauma where, it's like little T, you know, it's still there. I don't know.
Yeah. It's like walking pneumonia, but the trauma version. It's yes. Like you can, yeah. You can sort of get on with your life, but I remember getting to a point where I was scared to walk down the street and there was no fear. Like I was just afraid of everything. Everything's out of whack. It doesn't make sense. Maybe it's hormones. I can blame everything on hormones and gas. It's becoming a theme.
It's just gas. It's just gas.
Should that be the new name of our podcast?
I think so. I think that's a great idea.
But like, so Amy, for you, and Ashley, apparently for you, also as an age, I will get over this someday. You asserted control. Like, you attempted over and over again to control a situation, and it was an uncontrollable situation. So in your brain and maybe your heart, you were not ever in control, and asserting control didn't work. So you learned that you couldn't trust yourself. Like, you couldn't have control. And I think that probably shows up now, like, with the anxiety. It's like, I could try to control the situation, but it's not going to work because it didn't work before. And I think, you know, I'm just curious, like, you just fully betrayed yourself and you have to kind of like lean back into trusting that things can work out and do work out. And, you know, there are some things you can't control, but that's a scary realization.
Yeah, no, I think that's really well said and describes a lot of how I felt and still feel in many ways. Yeah, it's true.
This sucks. It's such a, I mean, we can talk about this all day. We can talk about physically what happens to us and why the baby didn't stick and it stuck in the wrong place and the freaking baby fell out. And you're just like, what, you know, physically is happening, but and emotionally it breaks your heart because you are already like buying the nursery stuff and you're already like picturing holding the baby and what it's, how fun it's going to be when the baby is four. We could talk about that forever and still not talk about the actual hormones that are happening in our body. And like, I think we underestimate the power of hormones and they do such really beautiful things for us and very devastating things for us. And we aren't always able to, in the moment, realize that our hormones are just like out of freaking control. And what we're feeling isn't just like emotional or physical fallout, it's like hormone fallout.
Actually, I'm gonna interject because I think that's so true with this process is it's feeling two emotions at once, right? Like, I think we always feel like, name the feeling. What's the one feeling you have? And it's like, I'm scared. Well, you're also excited. You can be scared and excited at the same time. And I think that's something that, I don't know, is not talked about enough, is that we can make space for more than one feeling. And it's okay. And the hormones and like all of that, there's a lot going on. And so it makes sense that we have more than one feeling going on, you know, and that's okay. And to make space for the fear and the excitement and the relief or whatever is in there, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I agree with that. I think the fear I've grown very comfortable with, but the excitement I almost don't allow myself to, like, you know, when someone's like, you must be so excited. I'm like, So excited I can't sleep at night because I'm paranoid. But yeah, yeah. No, I get that. And I would like to feel those feelings a little bit more. And but it's funny too because Dan, my husband, is the same way. He's like, you can't really wrap your head around it until it's here. We don't trust.
Yeah.
I don't trust my body. He probably doesn't trust my body. Like, we're... I don't know. Yeah.
But you are close. You're very close.
It's happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think... I like to think we're out of the scary zone, but... Who knows? I haven't really thought about the whole part where you have to give birth yet. That'll be fine,
that's
I'm
for the
sure.
Best.
Yeah. I haven't heard any bad things or it'll be nothing. I'm an 8. I've got this under control.
Exactly. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
I was wrong. Yeah. Wrong again. Wrong again.
Also, like for both of you, Amy and Ashley, you had a miscarriage, a devastating miscarriage during a global pandemic. So something that already is isolating and lonely, you're doing by yourself. You're trying not to catch this virus. You know, they're trying to protect you, but what they're doing is isolating you. And you can't blame them, but oh my gosh, like you have to go through that by yourself. And I can't imagine that. It's a lot.
And in a time when you're starving for connection and community, like, it's all you want. So I think that maybe, like you, Amy, I probably told more people than I think I would have if I wasn't in a pandemic, because I just wanted some kind of good news. When I found out I was pregnant, but when I had the miscarriage, I was just like, well, we gotta share good news. Someone was having a bad day, you know, they were isolating. I'm like, here, this might make you feel better. This cool thing happened. And then... like you said, you have to untell everybody. And yeah, that doesn't make it any easier.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think there's this whole separate category for people who have gone through this journey, but also during COVID. Because it's like, no one had written a book on how to deal with it yet. So, yeah, you're even more alone. So it was a weird time.
Well, and also like just looking at the three of us and so many other people that hopefully will get on and share their stories on this podcast is how different our experiences and our journeys are. The IUIs, the IVF, the recurrent miscarriages, the geriatric pregnancies, like. I think that they're all worth hearing and they're all important and valuable and they shouldn't have to go through it alone. And I think that's what I loved about this podcast and the voices because even the way that we're able to like laugh in between this like really horrible thing and we're a little bit more removed from it. It didn't happen to us yesterday or a month ago. But I think that really, really could help people. And that's wonderful that you guys decided to get together and start this.
Aw, thank you.
Yes, thank you. This was before I knew Ashley was an 8.
Can we work through this? I'm trying to be, you know.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Like you're in a club of infertility. And you find those people that relate and then people get out of the club and you're left behind and you don't know if you're going to get out of it and who's going to relate to you anymore because it's an ever evolving group. It's not like you're in it for life. I mean, we are, but we're not. It's such a different path or journey for all of us that like,
Well, and I just, you know, I hope that some people know, and I can only speak for myself, but I'm rooting for you. Like, I have come to peace with my journey, and I feel very comfortable with where we landed, and I don't have ill will for anyone who is pregnant. or anyone who hopes to be pregnant is working in that 2-week window. Like, I have so much empathy for you, and I'm like so jazzed for you. And I think a lot of my peers kind of tiptoe around me, like, I just want to make sure we can have this conversation. And so, just speaking as one person, I just want to make sure everyone knows, like, get them. You got it. Good job. Like, you do you. Like, your journey is not my journey. Mm-hmm. And like Ashley put in her episode, like, I don't want your baby.
Yeah.
I would have wanted my baby. And now I don't even want my baby. So I'm good.
Yeah.
We're good. We can, yeah.
I have a question for you, Emily. Is there a term for what you guys have decided that doesn't sound, like, awful? Because, like, you know, when you hear only child, oh, it's the only child. Like, there's only one. And then, you know, mm-hmm. like, how do you make... I don't like anything I've ever heard. It doesn't sound right.
What have you heard?
I've heard childless by choice, which is, like, that's saying that something's missing. But you're okay with it. But, like, I don't know.
What about the, like, dual income, no kids?
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking... Or, like, look at that well-rested couple.
Yeah, who travel a lot.
Yeah. Does that work? Is that sexier?
Look at that couple who has time for each other.
Oh, like, they're having a beer on the patio.
Right.
I like that well-rested. That's really good.
Okay. Look at that. Those spring chickens.
Yeah, they probably sleep in on weekends.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bet your ass we do. I don't know. I think it is hard. And childless is kind of an ugly word. Mm. It does have, like, strange absence feelings.
Yeah. I think we need to come up with something that's just some kind of tagline. Not that there needs to be a label, but it's just, like, I think it would make it easier to just be like, no, this is the plan.
Yeah, like, I've graduated into sleeping in.
Yeah.
I've graduated into, I don't know, because it doesn't, I don't know. It's not, like, a better option. Mm-hmm. It's just a different option.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I like that it's becoming a lot more, like, socially acceptable, and people don't, maybe you feel differently, but, like, I just think, way to go. I feel as strongly like I should do this as some people feel that they shouldn't, and I think that both are, you're probably right, like.
Oh, girl, you're about to take us on a...
Yeah.
Your body, your choice path. It's a slippery slope, actually.
I know.
but I do think that, you know, it comes up a lot. Like, a lot of people ask if we have kids. Like, it just is a natural question that people ask. And I think there is a conversation we could be having about careers and children where we say, like, what do you do for fun? Instead of asking any kind of, like, what do you do for work and do you have children? Like, those are very pigeonholed conversations. And I think we got to get away from, like, what your career status is and what your parent status is.
Yes.
And just, like, who are you as human beings? What do you do for fun?
Yeah, that's
right. Good. It's so true.
Or, you know, I don't know. All right, Amy, I can't believe that it's taken a decade to see your beautiful face again. That's ridiculous. But thank you for being on Misconceptions with us. Thanks for, like, revisiting your journey.
Yeah, and I encourage others who are listening that might, you know, want to speak and aren't sure if they should, and, you know, I give it a try. It was fun.
Good. Thanks for saying that.
This has been another episode of Misconceptions Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to be on the show, please email us at misconceptionspod@gmail.com. You can also follow along for behind-the-scenes footage at our Instagram account, Misconceptions Podcast. Stay tuned for another story in 2 weeks. Take care.